Welcome to All the Best. I'm Maren Winchester, and this episode we've teamed up with Tell Me a Story. Tell Me a Story is a live event that brings people together each month to share true stories. We headed down to the Red Rattler in Sydney's Inner West to catch their latest show on the theme of home. Indigenous elder Auntie Esther Carroll shares her first impressions of the city that she knew as the Big Mouth. Yeah.
My first task here this afternoon is to do Welcome to Country. I'm not originally from this part of Australia. I'm out in the bush, but I take great pride to be given the opportunity to welcome you to Aboriginal land, Gadigal land. As I said, I'm an Aboriginal woman, and I was born on a mission station in the mid-30s. In the early 1900s, the government of the day passed legislation to herd Aboriginal people together. And what they did was then put them all onto Crown land. And my particular mission was called Erambie, and that is in mid-western New South Wales. That mission station had about 26 families. So we were in a world of our own, more or less, and it was a world that I loved, and I call that home. And the reason I call that home is where my roots are, my mother and father, and nearly all my family were born there, all my brothers and sisters. And there was 11 of us. There is a mission there now, but it's not controlled by government. But in my day, it was. We were under the protection of the Aboriginal Protection Board, and they had a daily manager. A manager who looked after us, told us when to go 24/7, when we can move, when we can't move. But that didn't worry us because we didn't know any other world. It was our world. I enjoyed it. We had our games. Kids, we'd play around us. We'd play hide and seek. We'd go to the river. And in actual fact, I used to help Mum and Dad take our load of washing down to the river to wash it. If you know the 30s, that was around about the Depression too, I think, which everybody in Australia was feeling it. But naturally, it was just part of our world, our life. As I said, I call that home. I still go there. I have family living there at the moment, and I go every chance I get. And one of the loveliest things about it, my daughter, I went home and had her at Cowra so that she identifies with Cowra. That's to her and to her children. And to my great-grandchildren, they identify with that place as being part of them, which is great. And when I look around and what I'm involved with today is a lot of mixture of people from all over the world. And I'm very, very proud, privileged to meet you all and to hear the stories that you have. But anyway, getting back to my story, as I said, I call the mission home. But as you know too, like when you get up to a teenager, there's nowhere you can, you know, like grow or do anything because that's the mission, and then there's nothing there for you, no work, no anything. But I recall in the early days of my life, an uncle coming and telling us some stories of where he'd been. And we had no idea there was another world outside our mission because we didn't go to town. That was done by the parents. And anyway, my uncle was sitting down and he was telling us about this place that he'd been to. And he said it had a big mouth. And we were just sitting mesmerised, you know, by the stories he was telling us. And eventually when I became a teenager, we wanted to do something because I was listening to what he had to say about this other world. And also that work is attainable. So when I got older, that's what I did to me and a few others. We jumped on the train and came to this place with the big mouth, which was Sydney. And we didn't realise we didn't know where the big mouth was, but it's actually in Luna Park. But anyway, we found that we could get work, and there was two or three in the family and other friends. We all found work and we found rooms. And we were able to help the rest of the family move down here because there was about three or four more kids at home with Mum. So we brought them down here in the early 60s. And it was a very exciting time for Aboriginal people because we met others from other places, other tribal nations were doing the same thing. At that particular time, there was a movement towards acknowledging Aboriginal people in Australia. And that, as you know, like as I said, we had our own world. Here was a world down here where we stuck together, all the Koris. We didn't venture outside of that until we found out later. And it was through the works of a freedom writer called Mr. Charles Perkins, Dr. Charles Perkins. And he sort of inspired us to say, hang on, we can do things if we want to. It's up to us. So it was a very exciting time, as I said. Then in 1967, it was the first time Aboriginal people were ever counted in the census. I'm very proud to be part of that. I was part of that movement. And it was new to me, but it was exciting. Sydney was scary, but very exciting because of this route, because of that. And I went on then to rear my daughter and other family members. We all stayed here. So this is home as well, but it's in a different way. My roots are back there at Cowra, and that will always be home. But Sydney is home to me and my family now. And as I said, I went home to took my husband's ashes home a couple of years ago. And my great-granddaughter, who is present here with me today, was very shy and she never mixed much. And as the ceremony was going on, I said to one of the elderly ladies, I said, have a look at my granddaughter, look. She said, don't worry, she knows she's home.
Isn't she fabulous? Esther Carroll!
That was Auntie Esther Carroll there sharing her reflections on home. You're listening to All The Best, where we've teamed up with Tell Me A Story to bring you some live stories all about home. Next, Inner West local Dina Petrakis takes us down to her local RSL circa 1970.
It's 1974 and I'm standing in the foyer of the Marrickville RSL Club. I'm 13 years old, I admit that. I look around me and it's like a stage from Moulin Rouge. There's this wonderful flowery patterned carpet, there are drapes, there's a really long reception desk. Because it's the Marrickville RSL Club, it's manned by two surly old veterans, probably from the Boer War. And I look around and there are posters of upcoming acts, cheesy cabaret performers and women in can-can outfits, pretty much like today, actually. Not a lot has changed. And I'm there with my family. I'm there with my dad and my mum. I'm there with my sister Poppy, who's 10, and my sister Joanna, who's 2. And I look behind me and there's this big staircase. And it's got red carpet, and that staircase is really special because that staircase leads to a place where magic happens, and that's the Marrickville RSL Club Ballroom, which to us was the Disneyland of the 70s for migrants. Just a little bit of background. My family came to Australia from Greece in 1967, thank God, as economic migrants. And my dad was working around the Sydney area as a builder's labourer. So we're living in Marrickville at that time, we weren't really part of the Australian community as such, and people visiting our homes were more or less from the Greek community, my aunties, my uncles. And then my dad was the first to break that mould by making friendships in his workplace. And I remember the day particularly, my sister Poppy came running up and she said, Dina, guess what? She said, Dad's an old bastard. And I thought, how could she know what I'm thinking? And she said, I said, what? Don't say that loudly. No, she goes, really? And she showed me this badge. And it said, member of the Old Bastards Association and a membership number. So he was truly a real member of the Old Bastards Club. And that membership gave us entree into all the RSL clubs in Sydney. And that's how it all started. My dad at work used to talk about his family a lot and how he was proud of his daughters, and he used to tell people that I was really good at school and I was very academic. And I remember that one day his boss came from work, and so he was this man sitting in our lounge room, the lounge room that nobody sat in except politicians who were trying to drum up migrant votes. Nothing has changed. And very, very important people from the Greek community. So there was my dad's boss, and he had heard stories about me and how good I was at school. So he had bought me a present, and I thought, great, a Barbie. He didn't give me a Barbie. He gave me something much more important. He gave me my first dictionary. It was the Oxford Dictionary, and I still have it today. And I was thinking, here's this man listening to one of his workers talk about his family. We'd only been in Australia 3 years. I was still learning English, but it was somebody who valued education and knew how important it was and made this special gift to this small Greek girl. But at the time, while he was sitting in our lounge room on our 1970s brown velour lounge suite, looking at the brown patterned carpet with a plastic runner, looking at the archway which my dad had created as some sort of reminiscent of a Hellenic empire long gone, looking at the plastic moose head, which was actually a barometer that complemented the pink shell peacock that was a thermometer, that was the partner of the blue opal ashtray from Tukli, that as a whole really highlighted the plastic brown Spanish señorita that stood so high that was an ashtray. If you remember the ones you pushed the top and it opened, all of which would fetch a fortune on South King Street today. So that was the place that I grew up in. Back to the RSL club, my dad would take us on Friday nights because it was seafood buffet night. And back then, RSL clubs didn't have poker machines. And they were one of the few places that you could actually go to with your family if you're a blue-collar worker and have some entertainment, some really good food at a price that you can afford. So up the stairs we go. We sit down at a big table. Liberace's on the piano pounding away. Don't know how he made his way to Marrickville RSL. But anyway, the seafood came, and of course it is the early 70s, seafood cocktails. Yes, we thought they were the ants pants. In those real 70s glasses with the shredded iceberg lettuce, the prawns with a thick pink sauce. Then we had natural oysters, which my sister Poppy and I scoffed. And I remember the waiters and waitresses would look at us thinking probably, oh my God, these little girls are eating uncooked seafood, because they didn't know at home we had a diet of offal. So for us, eating oysters was not a big deal. And then we had, of course, the lobster tails, and it was a wonderful meal. But the highlight came at the end of the meal, where my sister Poppy and I were allowed a cocktail each. So I was 13, my sister was 10. I would always order a Brandy Alexander. That was my cocktail. Every week, I would say to myself, next Friday, I'm going to order something different. But as soon as I sat down and I stared at the bar, I just couldn't. I couldn't go past the Brandy Alexander. And I guess the commitment and the resolve that happened at the bar at the Marrickville RSL when I was 13 made me the strong, independent woman you see in front of you today. So along come the waiters, and they put the Brandy Alexander in front of me. My sister Poppy would either have a Fluffy Duck or a Blue Lagoon, for any of you who would remember those. And I would stare at it, and it would be in the brandy glass and a perfect sprinkling of nutmeg on top. And to this day, every time I smell nutmeg, it takes me away back when I had my first sips of alcohol at 13. The funny thing was, the waiters that used to stare at us eating our oysters didn't even blink as they were setting these alcoholic beverages in front of a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old. And just as well, Dad, it's too late for docs, so it doesn't matter. So I would take my first sip. of course, trying to get over the taste of the brandy because it was quite strong, and then it would become like a milkshake. And I'd slowly sip it. And my sister would have her Blue Lagoon and her Fluffy Duck. My mum would have a Cherry Advocaat. Joanna, my two-year-old sister, just in case you're wondering, had water. And so by this stage, it would usually be about 11 o'clock at night. And the cabaret would finish. And my dad would slowly pick up his little two-year-old who was asleep by then. My mum would take our hands and slowly we would walk back home. 2 years after that, we went to the Marrickville Town Hall and we became Australian citizens. 69. Yes, Dad, 69. Thank you. I was thinking, really, for us, the naturalisation process, the place where we first felt welcomed, we felt safe, we felt included, and we felt a real part of the community was not at the town hall in front of the mayor. It was actually at the Marrickville RSL Club Seafood Night. Thank you.
Dina Petrakis taking us back to a much simpler times of blue lagoons and prawn cocktails, with her story there all about home in Sydney's inner west. Maren Winchester with you on All the Best, and this week we've teamed up with Tell Me a Story, a live storytelling event based in Sydney. Performance artist Candy Royale takes to the stage now to tackle the topic of home in her unique poetic style.
I am my grandfather's memories of sunshine streaming through olive trees, of women sitting around and clucking like hens as they crush garlic with spices to make that night's meal. Their men tend gardens, plow the fields of their Baladi, their homeland. I am my grandfather's memories, remembering that he was raised as a Christian in a land of Muslims with Jewish friends. He played in the dirt with his future enemies, shared meals, and didn't yet know that history was in the making somewhere in Europe. I am my grandfather's memories and the things he doesn't even know yet, like he was one of millions of pawns negotiated in a deal that would alleviate the guilt of the world for crimes committed that they had no hand in. There was no hatred yet. I am my grandfather's nightmares, stories that came, horrors that caressed the ears of him, his parents, others in their community. It whispered that death was wiping out whole villages, that blood was being shed, so much that rivers ran upon the earth, turning it crimson. Violence was making the Arad arid, land once fertile, wasted. I am my grandfather's nightmares, where he wished to be deaf to the stories of the Nakba, where to stay was to die, where to leave was to die. Death comes in many forms, and when your feet can no longer touch the ground you took your first steps upon, that's a form of death too. I am my grandfather's nightmares of the stories coming closer, of terror being sowed whilst the peasants ploughed the land. He thought of the danger his aging parents were in. He thought of his own life ahead of him. He'd seen his people torn from the earth, no more roots. They wandered out dazed, confused, crying for their losses, mourning the dead, asking Allah what they did to deserve this. He'd seen whole villages razed to the ground, and he knew that a knock on the door was imminent, that the violence ravaging his land would not stop. In fact, it intensified daily, and so, knowing under occupation is no place to live, he left one day, saying goodbye to his parents. He swore he would send for them once he had found somewhere safe. I am my grandfather's memories as he stepped out that door one last time, held his hand up to shield his eyes, breathed in slow through his nostrils, and forced himself to remember every smell. He opened his eyes wide, allowed them to sting, and looked upon his village one last time. He forced himself to remember every sight. Then he closed his eyes and committed to memory all those memories before 1948, so that he would leave in love and not hate. Opening his eyes, I am his memory of walking away, of the crunch of dirt beneath his feet, of the earth's conversations with him, how the wind wished him well through the trees, and he responded with his heart, knowing he could never return. He swore to his homeland it would reside forever inside. I am my grandfather's memories as he immigrated to Lebanon to try to start again, how he worked long hours as a refugee in a foreign land, trying to gather the money required to save his parents from the death which was beckoning. I am my grandfather's memories as he managed to bring his parents over, then start his own family, getting married, having children, tragically losing a wife, getting married again, having more children, and trying to provide for them. I am my father's memories of being born into a displaced family, where the homeland is referred to constantly, where he had this sense that he belonged elsewhere, where the injustice was keenly felt, but where the world seemed not to care nor understand the plight of his people. I am my father's memories of a family striving to survive, always on the outside, and he as a child growing in another war-torn country, but knowing that he would leave before the army could get to him. I am my father's memories of being kidnapped twice, and twice being set free, for he did not subscribe to any form of religious extremism. I am my father's memories of constant warfare, being shot by rubber bullets, choking on tear gas, listening to missiles soar overhead and hoping against all hope that their bullet-riddled apartment block would not be hit next. I am my father's memories of being 18 and knowing if he did not leave, then he'd have to bear a weapon and the death that comes with it, either behind it or in front of it. So he left that land, knowing he could never return. He became a deserter of a war he did not agree with. As his plane ascended toward the heavens, I am his memories of hope for a better future, but sadness that he may never see those whom he loves again. I am my father's memories of picking grapes in France, trying to get enough money to get further away. I am my father's memories of boarding a plane for Australia, where he knew my mother to be, and tearing up his passport, arriving as a refugee. I am my own memory of being 8 or 9 years old and listening to the voice of my grandfather on a tape he sent us from a land I can barely imagine, but whose food I eat, whose music I hear, whose history I am already learning. I am my own memory of being 10 or 11 years old and seeing my father cry for the first time. My father knew his father was dying but couldn't return. He didn't get to say goodbye to his baba on his deathbed. That's when I became my grandfather's memories. You see, he could no longer remember now that he'd been buried. I am my own memory of being a teenager and struggling to exist between two cultures, one which sought me to hang on to a past and one which forced me into the future, one which sought to fill me with love and one which forced me to belong to this land. I am my own memory of trying to understand why my father was always so angry, until I was old enough to see that where once my father had been a warrior, he was now nothing more than a worrier, and I mistook that fear at losing his land, his family, everything I took for granted, for anger. I am my family's blood, where these memories, these histories course through my veins, where my own feet have not yet touched the soil of where my great-grandfather, my grandfather, and my father's footsteps roamed. I am the memories of the displaced, the lost, the hidden, the lies, the propaganda, the hatred. I am the memories of blue sky, dry heat, hummus, tabbouleh, tabla. I am the memories of that lost land and this land gained.
That was Candy Royale sharing her feelings about home at Tell Me a Story, a live storytelling event at the Red Rattler in Sydney. Thank you to Tell Me a Story, the Red Rattler, Auntie Esther Carroll, Dina Petrakis, and Candy Royale for all sharing their stories this episode. Tell Me a Story holds regular storytelling events. For more information about Tell Me a Story, go to tellmeastory.net.au. All the Best is produced at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN in Melbourne, Radio Adelaide and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Our production manager is Carly Ann Keneally. Our executive producers are Jordana Caputo and Belinda Lopez. And I'm Maren Winchester, the features executive producer. If you would like to share a story with us, go to allthebestradio.com. Catch us next week for more homegrown stories from around Australia.